Live from the Battleborne Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go, Cofield and Company. We are on the road at the Battleborne Broadcast Center. We're going to talk to our legal insider and man of reason, we'll say. I think we'll have a good discussion about a couple of basketball topics and our baseball team, if they're coming here. We still haven't had much progress on the A's, but Justin Watkins will be in just a little bit. Adam Hill is here as the company. What's up, Adam?
Hopefully Justin is not coming from our house because, fun out on the road.
Is he a fellow SoHi guy?
He is.
Yeah, I noticed I drove down towards the Silverton and Blue Diamond from the north, and I was like, wow, okay, I guess this is phase, what do you want to call it, phase one. The Dropicana thing is still not done yet. They're making a lot of progress. We're what, like 3 years in?
Yeah.
And then they started working on the roads south of that, and they look like they're gonna be a mess. And I guess that, what does that affect the exchange with
what's it's the 15 north to 215 west, which I take very, it's, you know, all the time. Apparently it's closed right now it is a disaster. On most days, you don't know if it's going to take you a minute to get off the ramp or like 36. It's kind of a crapshoot every day. And then today was just like, yeah, it's closed. Like, okay. So hopefully it's closed this week till Wednesday. Hopefully that means smooth sailing going forward.
Well, at least if you know,
I know,
you can take a back way. Sure. When you don't know, then you're screwed.
Sure. But I my hope is, because too often it's like, hey, it's closed for a week. And you're like, all right, cool. At least when that's done, man, we're going to be flying around these streets. And then it's like, no, we're going to start a new project now.
I feel like that's the case.
Yeah.
Don't hope for too much.
Thursday when it's reopened, I assume, smooth sailing.
We have a story coming up later that I don't believe. I have multiple stories today that I don't believe.
Okay.
But the reason behind one of those stories may be the story you just had coming in. So we'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
That could be an explanation. I'll give you a little tease. I guess we've been graded really bad drivers when it comes to Las Vegas and Las Vegas area drivers. We have a lot of road rage issues. So
I can
maybe
see
it's because of the roads being fixed all the time.
I can see that.
Stanley Cup is back. Started off on Saturday. Want to get to that inside of 5 minutes. Game two is tonight. But Raiders minicamp this week. I'm not a Raiders beat guy like you are. I feel like there's never a break. We had talked about probably 2 weeks ago, right? The Players Association was floating some ideas about, hey, is there a way to condense this so that the players aren't at the freaking facility all the time? You've been over there a lot covering things, and now what, 3 more days this week, Tuesday through Thursday, right?
Yeah, and then after this is when the break actually comes. So for those that are like, there's never an off season. Starting Thursday, it's the last day of minicamp. That is the last day the players are around until they show up in Orange County July 22nd. So about, you know, 5.5 weeks, 6 weeks or so they'll have off after this. But, the offseason, really no such thing. And the proposal would be no more OTAs, which is what we've just had. We've just gone through OTAs the last, like, 6 weeks. Get rid of OTAs and minicamp and just start training camp, like, 4 or 5 weeks earlier would be the plan. So you'd have, like, a two-month training camp. Players are pretty mixed on this, actually. We've talked to a lot of them the last, you know, couple of weeks, and especially some of the younger players. I think it's beneficial for them to be in at this point, getting acclimated, especially rookies, that sort of thing. Some players say, hey, I'd love to do that. Just have a full summer and then show up, start getting in shape, you know, have 2 months of camp, that'd be great. And others are like, nah, it keeps me on a schedule, keeps me in a routine, and then shorter training camp is better. Because it's, you know, the training camp wears on those guys as it is. If you double it, that would be a grind. So there's not a consensus. There's no unanimity on this, which is why I don't foresee it happening. Because I think a lot of players are, you know, 50-50 on it. But yeah, that is the proposal right now, to try to cut down on some of these, you know, every single week during the offseason being in there.
Although you said something a couple weeks ago about player safety, which I will address with Justin Watkins because we'll hit this again in the 4 o'clock hour. Before that, though, there's a bunch of storylines, including Davante Adams.
Yeah. It's been voluntary up to this point. OTAs are voluntary. Players don't have to be there. And Devontae, I think, has been around, but he hasn't been on the field. So I think he missed maybe one, and then he was kind of doing his some pool work, that sort of thing, the other voluntaries. So we expect him to be out there. It's mandatory minicamp this week, so that kind of changes the equation a little bit. And, Max Crosby was there last week but didn't participate in practice. And they don't have to be in practice. Like, the team kind of decides what kind of work to do. But, we'll see what level of activity we see out of Devontae Adams. He's a guy who's talked openly about it. Like, look, he knows what he has to do at this age especially. There's no reason for him to be out there during voluntaries, and not necessarily sure he'll be out there for mandatory, but he'll be in the building. He'll be around. So we'll see what he's doing the next couple of days.
Do all the responsibilities at camp cut into podcast time at all? And interview time at all? Did Max do an interview last week?
He's doing podcasts. I think he banked a bunch of them. I think he did a ton of them in a row.
I thought he did an interview where he was talking about LeBron and said he's loyal to the Raiders. He's not going to be bouncing around in his NFL career. Like, Raider for life. And I looked at it, I'm like, one, I don't know why LeBron is involved in this.
Yeah.
Two, that's not going to happen.
Well,
in all likelihood.
It could happen, but isn't he the same player that, like, 3 months ago said he would demand out if Antonio Pierce wasn't hired?
He was the one who helped pick the coach.
Yes.
By putting pressure on the organization to say he would demand a trade if AP wasn't the coach. But here's reality. You can think, like Derek Carr did, quarterback's different.
Yeah.
But so is the high-priced defensive end. How many of the high-priced defensive ends make it their entire career with one team?
Yeah, not very common.
And let's talk to Max when he's 30. And the Raiders have made the playoffs like two times from total from now. And you're at that final turn for one big contract. And you're like, man, I would like to win. Now, I don't know what's going to happen over the next 4 or 5 years with the Raiders. But if they don't win, all of a sudden, the I'm this for life kind of changes when you're staring down the barrel at that last contract and you want to go somewhere and win.
It does, but...
And sometimes it's not your decision.
Yeah.
Khalil Mack may have wanted to be a Raider for life.
Sure.
Things change. John Gruden, I don't think, wanted a high-priced guy on the team. Maybe they didn't have the money to put in escrow and however that all works with a big bonus. And he got moved. So like, shocked at the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible that, at least from Max Crosby's perspective, like, the move they made this offseason, which people didn't really talk that much about, it was just very... It was kind of a weird thing, but certainly showing loyalty from the franchise. Like, they had cap space and they just said, here's some money. That never happens in sports.
It didn't come with stretching things out and being more cap friendly on the front end.
Oh, okay. Oh, really? Take some money. Okay. Like, you've been great. You're a good example. Let's show the rest of your teammates. Like, hey, this is what happens when you work the way Max does.
2 weeks later, I might feel pretty good and go, you know what? I'm going to be ready for life.
Yeah.
But he is 26 now. Yeah. So you got four seasons until he's like 30, 31, and that's when people start to look to cut costs. Although, I'm almost going to argue against myself, and this is kind of a silly thing because Max Crosby said, Raider for life, not like, these other guys chasing rings. Mark Davis, now that he has money, doesn't have the limitations he probably had at the time with Khalil Mack.
Yeah.
Mark is so loyal, he may look to keep Max around and be one of those legendary, 14-year guys in one uniform.
Well, that might be more appealing to Max than anything else. I mean, I will say losing is wearing on him. There's no question. And you see it after games, right, when you're in the locker room and you're talking to him, and he takes it very hard, as I would. I'm the same way, but he does take it very hard. And at some point, if you don't start winning, maybe that does change what he wants to do. But I would believe, for a lot of reasons. I mean, one, I think he's incredibly happy in Las Vegas. I think he makes a lot. He has a lot of connections, a lot of money outside of football in Las Vegas that have, benefited him. Also, the tax situation is great to be playing in Las Vegas, and you're making more money here than you would anywhere else. All those things are, true. And so that could help in the end. But I think the one thing that could potentially, as you said, maybe the team just has to move on from it at some point, potentially. But the only thing that could, I think, want him to get out of here would be, like, I can't go an entire career without winning.
Right.
And at some point, they've got to build that team around him.
Stanley Cup, game two coming up. What did you see in game one, the wrong side won?
Yeah. That's pretty clear from how the game went. It was 3-0 Florida. Edmonton was clearly the better team, but the best player on the ice just happened to be in net.
Bob.
For Florida. And those things happen sometimes. It's one of those things where you talk about it and people, it just makes people so mad. I don't know why. I saw people responding to this. I think the ESPN headline the other day was, you know, Oilers thoroughly outplay Panthers in game one loss. And people were like, what do you mean outplay? It was 3-0. Okay. Yeah. We've seen this with the Golden Knights, right? We talk about this a lot where the Golden Knights will, you know, be thoroughly outplayed and win a game, or they'll be terrible, or they'll be great and lose. You're like, well, the better team didn't win. And people are like, scoreboard says it. Like, sorry. That's just, there is ways to measure who the better team is. And it's just beyond just the eye test.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was very clear that Edmonton was the better team in that game. Florida came away with the win, and that's a problem that, you know, Edmonton could have in the series. Like, everybody knows they've got these superior skill players all over the place, but Bobrovsky was by far the best player on the ice, and Florida got the win.
You can hear coverage of that game on radio on 12:30 the game, one of our sister stations. Coverage will begin at 4:30. So Panthers at Edmonton, game two of the Stanley Cup.
Also, I could not, by the way, care less. Could not care less who wins the series.
Right.
It's more the observation, right? It's not like, here's an Edmonton. Like, I really don't care who wins.
Nah.
Just watching it.
I'm curious to see about the ratings, but I think we need to give it a couple of games before we start comparing and contrasting. Or would you like to do it now?
No, I saw a headline and I immediately was like, okay. I know what the ratings were.
I saw a lot of twisting of positives and then some people went negative on it with the Stanley Cup.
Well, the headline I saw, and I didn't even read the story. I was actually driving over here. I saw the headline. It said ratings up 7.1% across North America.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, don't even have to read the story. I know what the deal is here.
You noticed in the notes we have here, because we always put together a rundown, what our vast research crew, because we have a bunch of researchers. We don't do any work on this. The U.S. ratings were solid, not spectacular, but about 2 million on average. And then across North America was 3.6 million because Canada, all of it is tuned in.
Yeah. I saw 7.1.
Really? That high?
Yeah.
Okay.
But that was North America. So it was all, like, all Canada.
You did just say 7.1. I just said 3.6. All right.
Yeah. All Canada.
You know, the women's softball did 1.9 million.
Wow.
College World Series.
Oh, it was on a lot.
Yeah. And we don't have, I was looking for WNBA numbers because they had an ESPN game over the weekend that I watched for a little bit. Liberty and Connecticut, just seeing how that did on Biggin. I think it was on ABC. When you turn on a game, do you even know what network it's on sometimes?
No.
Okay. Like, I don't know if it's on ABC or
I was actually,
ESPN. Because I never go to the live calendar or live, grid of shows. I just, if it's on, it's on. I turn it on.
There was I was hanging out with some guys on Saturday, and one of them made a very boomer comment. And I can't remember what it was, and everybody just started making fun of him.
Oh, yeah?
He's like 33 or something. And everybody started making fun of him because it was about, like, TV, like, right. Something. And one of the things I said to make fun of him, I was like, I don't even know what channel that's on. Like, who cares? It's on streaming. Yeah. It streams. That's where you find it.
I don't know. I don't know. Until I'll be honest, when looking up some of the ratings, I was like, oh, that was on ABC. Okay. Well, that should make a difference.
You don't even have to flip through. Literally, you grab your remote.
It should be right there.
You talk into your remote.
Yeah.
Say, put this on. And it comes on.
You're highfalutin with your talkie.
Highfalutin. I don't think that's like a novel thing anymore. I think everybody has that.
On the way back, NBA time. Bigger story. 2-0 lead with the Celtics over the Mavs and a non-call down the stretch. Or is it that the Lakers whiffed on Dan Hurley? I see one headline here. Low-balling Hurley shows what's wrong with the Lakers.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
So I'm not a Laker fan, but the Lakers doing well. It's a good story.
You a fan?
And I do live with a Lakers fan, although she's very much fading right now with the LeBron era. And we've had this coach thing going on for a while. We thought up until middle of last week that J.J. Redick was getting closer and closer, that Redick was going to be the guy. LeBron handpicked, right? And then Dan Hurley's name pops up. And then Dan Hurley, the UConn coach, visits LA over the weekend or Friday, whenever it was. And then we hear over the weekend, decision on Monday. Decision comes, not going to take it. Going to stay at UConn. I just read you a headline 5 minutes ago claiming Lakers lowballed him. Basically, they got it wrong again. What have you seen the offer reported at?
Six for 70?
That's what I saw as well. Is that lowball?
No, I don't think so. What, 12, 11, 7, 5, something like that? 11, 7, 5 a year?
I mean, should they have gone, you know, six for 90, 15 mil a year?
I mean, the number I kept seeing people, you know, throw out is 100.
Do you think he was going to take it? Do you think it was money?
I don't think it was money, but I also think there's a certain number where you won't say, somebody won't say no. Or like, do I think it was a money decision? No. If they would have offered him 6 years for 800 million, yeah, he probably would have taken.
Blow me away. Yeah. I have no choice.
Yeah.
So maybe 15 mil a year would have been it.
Maybe.
Now, I said last week, I don't think he's an NBA coach right now from a maturity standpoint. I think he'd have to change a lot as a coach. I think he's used to coaching college kids and also being able to, you know, bully people around the program, bully opposing fans. He's forgiven pretty easily because so many of these markets around college sports are just so desperate to win that they'll let the coach crap on them. And I think that would be a big adjustment, maturity-wise. And now he's like late 30s. He's pushing 50.
Yeah.
But he's been able to operate like a lunatic on the high school level. And then you said at, what, Rhode Island, he was crazier than he is now.
Yeah, he was wild.
So I don't think the Lakers miss out. I think Redick's the better choice. But it's not a great look. And there's something going on here. Like, what's happening? Is there a power struggle within the organization? Hey, we got to... You know what? LeBron wants this guy. We want someone else who's going to be here beyond LeBron. Like, is there a, hey, we're going to get the guy for kind of LeBron, but really AD and the years after. We don't want the guy who may be only good for 2 or 3 years while LeBron's here. Right? There's got to be something.
Yeah. But I mean, I also think there was probably a, okay, JJ Redick might be interesting. LeBron wants him. We might be able to do that. But hey, this would be the splash of splashes. Hire the guy who's won 2 national championships in a row, big name, been a name for, you know, in the business for, you know, 50 years, 60 years, since before he was even born. Like, that's the guy. And they identified him. And it didn't work. Now, I think the one thing we don't know is, did he just say no? Or did he say, is that the final offer? We don't know. And if he said, hey, it's going to take a little bit more to get me, and they were like, no, we're good. Then I think you can criticize the Lakers.
Right.
But if they went, they found the guy, whether you believe it or not, they found the guy that they think was the absolute best hire. And they made a run at him. And he said no. Like, that happens.
Funny enough, this morning I was sending an email from an offshore betting site, and they had a Hurley Lakers coach or UConn coach starting 24-25. Lakers coach was minus 400. Going back to UConn was plus 300. Now, I assume the limits at that site on this bet were $50.
Yeah.
Not going to risk it, but I wonder what they were hearing that they thought. Just reports?
I'd imagine.
Whoever the source was, if they had one, was poorly sourced.
Well, I also think once you see financial details associated with an offer, and he had said he was going to LA, I'm sure that it was like, okay, let's go. Like, if guys are talking, that's fine. Once you see the financials come out, which we saw last night, then I think people start to say, okay, this is happening. Because you don't get that far down the road usually unless there's something, unless there's smoke, you know, to be found.
If I recall correctly, on Friday, I don't know that you made a choice, did you?
No.
When we were saying, hey, Hurley or Redick. I say Redick. I think you were leaning more towards neither.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't have a problem with Redick at all. I think it's, you know, it's worth a try. Maybe I'm biased because I'm watching Clipped. I'm seeing a lot of JJ Redick, and then my YouTube algorithm pops up old JJ Redick clips of his podcast.
You're not objective.
Now. But I didn't jump on him. I wasn't, you know, I don't think there was one that was that much stronger of a choice than the other. And I think there might be better options out there, but I don't think Redick is a terrible idea.
So what's happening in the NBA finals? What's your read? 2-0 closer game last night. Look, pivotal non-call. It wasn't an easy call. There was a push in the back on a fast break.
Terrible call.
PJ Washington going in for what was probably going to be an easy dunk. Does get pushed in the back just enough to kind of alter his jump. And he got double blocked, but he also got blocked by the rim.
Yeah.
That was what Brown with his hand on his back. And I think White was coming in to block him as well. No call. That would have made it. If there was a plus one, it could have made it 103-101 with like 49 seconds left.
Yeah.
Instead, ball goes the other way, and Mavs wind up losing.
It's hard enough for us to beat five really good players on the Celtics. Now we have to play eight. Kind of sucks. But we're a very resilient team, very resilient family. You know, it's kind of a family business.
Do you have Jason Kidd in your ear right now?
No, we're it's a family business. We're all a family.
Oh, geez, we're doing this again.
We're a family, and we will fight
to
the end.
How many memos are you getting on the Mavs?
We're going to fight to the end.
The Adelsons. What's going on here?
You know, the whole world thinks it's over. Thinks the series is done.
Wow, you're so inspirational. But
that's not how we...
Very believable.
That's not how we handle things. Until the last buzzer sounds, we will fight.
We'll get you an update on the MVP price now, because maybe this is a time, or is it way too late on Jason Tatum? Is he too far buried? Jrue Holiday! And, you know, there's always that chance that you get someone further down the board, and there's nothing that quite measures up on the Celtics side to what Jrue Holiday, any individual performance on offense doesn't really measure up to what Jrue Holiday has done to Kyrie Irving. Through the first two games, he has blanketed him, and we'll get to what Kyrie was sort of anointed as leading into the series. A lot of big talk, and Kyrie has just not been very good at all. On the way back, though, I want to get to a little more on the Lakers' upcoming decision. And also the takes on, more takes on Hurley and Redick and who is the right choice.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Get ready to call in. We're going to be giving away Lakers DFW tickets, doing exhibition season here in October. We'll tell you how you can get your tickets, but we'll have a pair of tickets in less than five. So stick around. Don't call now. Adam Hill, Steve Cofield, Justin Watkins coming up in about 30 minutes. Steve Kim, boxing insider, and the Korean Cosell, as he calls himself, Kimfucius, Korean curmudgeon. You get the point?
Of course.
He's Korean, and he has opinions. I misspoke going to break acting as if or sounding as if the Lakers still had a choice between Hurley and Redick. That's gone now. Dan Hurley has sold the Lakers today. No, apparently had an offer of 6 years and $70 million. I'm sure the stories are going to come out about what happened here. It is good news for UConn because that would have been Armageddon, you know, this late. We're not quite yet into the summer, but rosters are settled over the country, Adam. So I don't know what the hell UConn would have done. I know one guy they might consider just down the road who was an assistant at UConn. So coaches my school at Rutgers. I was like, okay, how about Dan Hurley stay around?
Yeah.
Let's not have this blow up, please. So good news for, and it's good news for college basketball. Yeah. He's building himself as one of the, you know, pillars of the college basketball coaching community. So we'll see what UConn does this year. But I think the true story is now told with the Lakers on why they went after Hurley after hearing so much about Redick for weeks and weeks. I mean, shouldn't this deal be done in like the next 2 days?
You would think so.
Or do we have a complicating factor here because they really can't do anything until he's done with the finals on the broadcast side?
Oh, they well,
so we could have nonsense here for like, well, this series could be over in two games.
Whoa.
I know you're concerned about your family.
Yeah. Family business.
Yes. Family business.
Small
you're
business.
All under the same umbrella.
Yep. Small business. Fighting for the little guys.
If another coach emerges as a candidate, then I think we know what's happening here.
Yeah.
The Lakers organization is just not that into Redick, and they're trying to find someone who can coach to the future and not just coach for
LeBron. LeBron hasn't guaranteed that he'll come back even if Redick's the coach. And that could be a part of it too.
Yep. I threw out the storyline earlier. If the Lakers, one, don't want to hire the coach that he's comfortable with. Two, don't want to draft Bronny. Then he can do whatever he wants. Right? Yeah. He can write his ticket anywhere. Now, there's no guarantee wherever he wants to go we'll get Bronny, but if that's one of his big goals, he can join a mid-level team. I mean, really, anyone with 45 wins or more in the regular season, and probably a couple even lower than that, you get LeBron, you are a championship contender. Now, you're going to have to draft Bronny with it, which would suck if you actually have a good first-round pick, you know, because you want to use the first to actually get some help. But he can do whatever he wants right now. So the Lakers are in a weird, kind of a uncomfortable position. Do what he wants, or he's gone. But maybe there are people in the Lakers organization who are like, yeah, we're ready to turn the page. We're tired of having, you know, three different bosses between LeBron, RGM, and Clutch. So what's your gut feeling? Redick hired next 2 days, press conference in, you know, when the series is over. We're not going to talk now, but when the NBA finals are over and this guy is done with his job announcing, then we'll have a press conference. But here he is. He's the guy.
Yeah, I mean, I assume Redick is the front runner, but there's no guarantees on that. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. And I do think a lot of it has to do with what LeBron's future is going to be. And if he hasn't, you know, if he hasn't guaranteed to them that he'll be back, or maybe, who knows, do they want him back? That's another, like, do you want to turn younger now? Do you think there's no chance of winning with LeBron? I think you have to keep him around and try to make it one more time.
You could see a scenario where they announce the hiring of J.J. Redick, and then LeBron's like, see ya.
No, I'm saying I think that that's part of the factor of, like, he maybe hasn't guaranteed him anything yet. And maybe Hurley was there. Hey, this is about the future. It's about developing younger guys. We'll move on. We'll get younger. Build around AD and move forward.
Damn. Too much confusion. I want something conclusive. Not going to happen today.
It doesn't happen.
364-1100. Lakers coming to town against Golden State. Exhibition game October 15th. T-Mobile Arena. Tickets are on sale now. Right now. AXS.com. AXS.com. Warriors. Lakers. 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 Right here in Las Vegas. T-Mobile Arena. You can get your tickets now for the October 15th matchup, but you can call Griffin. 364-1100. Caller 7. 364-1100 for Lakers in Vegas.
Steve Kim, the host of the Three Knockdown Rule, joins Cofield and Company.
Okay, Atari, let's see your best pitch.
You're out, Rose!
The Atari video computer system is 20 cartridges with 1,300 game variations you play on your own TV set.
Adam, you come from a hard Scrabble background, I assume. Did you have Atari right out of the gates?
No. But our neighbors did.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's a good break.
Sure. You go play it. We got it eventually.
What kind of neighbor did you have? What kind of neighborhood did you live in?
Poor one, where people are friendly to each other.
So you assume the Atari was stolen?
Probably fell off a truck, yeah. Makes sense.
Okay, that way? Makes all right. Sense. Steve Kim, I don't know if Steve had the Atari right out of the gate. Steve, how you doing, buddy? I think Steve with us. Stevie!
Yo-ho!
What's up, buddy? We just played your, you had retweeted Pete Rose and baseball and Atari, so we were just talking about the Atari from back in the day, and if you had one early on.
You know, the Atari 2600 was like the standard. I actually had an Odyssey from Magnavox. It was great fun. I actually didn't mind it. They had Casey Munchkin, which is a much better version of Pac-Man than Atari 2600 had. And then after that, the state of the art was really Intellivision, which had the best sports games. And then it was ColecoVision, and then that was like the end of the Stone Age of modern game consoles in home. But I was an Odyssey guy.
I'm just looking at Casey Munchkin right now. It really is just, it's such a knockoff. Like, how did they not get sued for this?
Well, here's the thing. That's a great question. The thing with Casey Munchkin that made it fun is that the pellets that you ate, you had to chase them. They moved around. And this is kind of funny. It's not like I'm a historian of this, but the Atari 2600 version of Pac-Man was such a bust. I mean, we're talking about if that was a basketball player, it'd be Michael Olowokandi or that kid from UNLV that went to the Cavaliers, Bennett. It was so bad that I think people were willing to overlook that what a knockoff Casey Munchkin was. That was a fun game, guys. I'm not going to lie to you. That was probably my go-to game on the Odyssey console.
And then in television, it was almost like a calculator controller, right? There was just a bunch of numbers?
Yeah, it had a bunch of numbers, and it had a disc. That's how you moved. It wasn't a joystick. It was like a rounded disc that you pressed down on. And their football game, I thought, was actually really good. Now, look, I'm not saying it's like Madden 23 or 24, but it was a good game. I mean, the Atari sports games were not good. It was like 3-on-3 football. The Intellivision hockey was really good. But, yeah, then, I can't forget Atari 5200, which was like the newer version of 2600. That actually wasn't bad either, to be honest with you.
I feel like us talking about Atari for a lot of people are like, what is this? This sounds so old. It's almost equivalent for people if we start breaking down what Adrian Broner used to look like when he boxed. How can he look this old at this young an age?
You know, he's one of these guys who aged quickly, very undisciplined lifestyle, which he chronicled over social media. And, you know, I was there, and this is how time flies. I didn't realize it was 11 years ago from the time that he walked in, he swaggered in as this undefeated guy that was supposed to be the heir apparent to Floyd Mayweather against Marcos Maidana, December of 2013, and he got beat pillar to post. Never been the same guy. He was a little bit gun-shy, never really wanted to throw his head in there and be committed. And then, look, his lifestyle was not conducive to having what I would call a long, prosperous career. And, you know, look, if you cannot beat a Blair Cobbs at this moment in time, you probably don't have much of a present or a future in the sport.
So does someone need to either introduce the two of them or just hold up a picture of Adrian Broner to Ryan Garcia? Bruh, what are we doing this weekend? Waldorf, Astoria, The Room, Arrest. Like, come on, man.
I love the fact he had a helmet on during his perp walk. He looked like Darth Helmet from Spaceballs, you know? I kind of told people I wouldn't be in love with Ryan Garcia. I mean, who's the piece of now? But anyway, here's the thing about Ryan. Is he crazy or not? Because at times he acts like he's this big mental health advocate and that I'm here to fight for everybody's mental health. Then when you question him on it, he says, no, I'm not crazy at all. You can't do that. Like, he balked against extra testing, a psychological evaluation from the New York State Athletic Commission. And then he acts like he was crazy as a fox in the buildup or in the aftermath of the Devin Haney fight. And now here's the thing. Now his representative, Lupe Valencia, puts out a statement through Chris Mannix talking about, well, right now he's working on his meds. Which is it? Are you crazy or not? Let us know. It's an emotional roller coaster, guys.
Well, he did predict an earthquake, according to him.
I mean, I guess. He also predicted that something bad would happen June 8th, and he was right on that, his own arrest. look, he did. The kid is cringe Rye Stradamus. I give him credit. I'd like to know who he likes in the Super Bowl and the national title game this year. But Ryan, to me, on a more serious note, is a cautionary tale of how intoxicating social media and fame can be. And I've also heard from other people that hop on out of curiosity when he does these Twitter spaces. I certainly don't go on them. That he almost has like a God complex. It's almost like a cult-like following. And me and Jason Whitlock did a special little Fearless segment on Ryan Garcia that'll probably be released tomorrow morning. I think the genius of Ryan Garcia is this guy. He is like a cult leader like Jim Jones. He may not be the smartest guy on planet Earth, but you know what? He's a lot smarter than his minions and his cult following.
Steve was looking at me like I was crazy. About a month ago, he said there would be major earthquakes in both L.A. and Vegas on June 6th. There was a very small earthquake in Orange County, and he's like, see? And then everybody's like, well, there's three a day in
right.
Southern California. Like, what are you talking about?
You know, I'm going to predict tomorrow that on the 405 freeway around 4 to 7, there's going to be a lot of cars and there's going to be traffic.
Wow. We have a fight this weekend. Frank Martin and Tank Davis. And I feel like every time Tank fights, the pre-fight hype is more about who he's not fighting.
There's a lot of validity to that. Look, Frank Martin is not a bad fighter. He's generally listed among the top 10 at 135. Quick, fast, quicksilver southpaw. My only concern is the last time he fought was in July, and he just kind of eked out a decision over this Armenian fighter, Haratunian, who is now facing Shakur Stevenson on July 6th, I believe. Look, I think Frank Martin is a solid fighter. Is it the fight that we want to see at 135? No. And that has been the thing about Tank Davis. Because of his own popularity and his ability to draw, he gets special treatment. And Mayweather Promotions and PBC have not been afraid to exploit that much like anyone else in boxing. But it's interesting, guys. Now, you're in Vegas, and that fight, I believe, is going to happen at the MGM Grand. Is there any buzz for it? Because it seems like this fight has not been promoted all that much.
Well, Adam, you're covering it, right, if they let you in?
Yeah, they're letting me in. I'll be covering it. It is the 100th championship fight card at MGM Grand history.
Oh, that's right. I heard about that. And I think it's far from being one of the top 10 most anticipated cards that they've ever had. And look, it's not a bad card top to bottom. You get to see David Benavidez. I'm curious about that fight, gentlemen, because he's now moving up to 75. So I want to see how's his body, which had to really fit into 68 and squeeze into that weight class, facing a pretty good light heavyweight of the past in Oleksandr Govozik, former world champion, who really has not been all that active the last 4 or 5 years since losing to Artur Beterbiev in Philadelphia. So I'm curious about how he looks at 75. And then there's always going to be questions about what's next for the PBC, because if you look at the boxing calendar, gentlemen, right now, after next Saturday, they don't have an official card on the docket for the rest of the summer.
Steve said the story with Tank Davis is always about who he's not fighting. Obviously, that's the case of Benavidez as well. And he's kind of talking a lot about it of, hey, I'm doing this because Canelo won't fight me. So, I mean, is he too focused on Canelo and who won't fight him than
well,
what he's actually doing?
Thing, though, guys, we know we do this. As reporters, we always ask about things. And the framing of how you present that particular story or quote is going to paint guys in certain light. In all fairness to David Benavidez, here's the difference between him and Tank. Tank has the leverage to make fights with a guy like Shakur Stevenson or a Ryan Garcia or a Teofimo Lopez, and hasn't, right? Although he did fight Ryan Garcia last year. David Benavidez is certainly a very good fighter, very exciting, good television watch, but he doesn't have the leverage to tell a Canelo Alvarez, hey, you have to fight me or we're going to fight on this date. So it's a little bit different. I think the context has to be pointed out. And look, when you are going to interview a David Benavidez, it's only natural that you're going to ask him eventually about Canelo. And look, we all do shows here. And when you want to clip out a portion of your show and create buzz and hit the algorithm and have people talk about it, you're going to talk about the one subject, whether they want to or not, that's going to generate the most buzz. So I'll be honest, if I'm talking to David Benavidez, guys, and he gives me a juicy quote about Canelo, guess which clip I'm going to ask for? That one. That's just the way the game works.
Steve Kim is with us. His spot is presented by Snack Nutrition. You can find him on Twitter at SteveKim323. I assume when you and Whitlock hook up for some conversation that you'll be talking about Caitlin Clark not being on the Olympic team roster.
It's funny. Today's show, which will be premiering on YouTube in about 7 minutes, the whole show is basically on Caitlin Clark. I'm not on that particular show. I did a short segment about Cringe Rye. I do think I will probably be brought in on another segment or two to discuss that. I have some different views on it. I actually think Caitlin Clark is being done a favor by giving her the summer off. I think she needs a rest. I think she needs some opportunity to build up her body and get stronger physically. And I think this is another thing that she'll never say. She may not want to be around those women. She might be better off just waiting a few years and getting with the new generation of players that's going to be more respectful of her than the current crop that's on that Olympic team. That's the truth. And so I don't think it's a complete snubbing. There is a case for and against her. But I will say this, Caitlin Clark, that story is actually bigger than the NBA Finals. I never thought I'd say that, guys.
It's crazy, right?
It's insane. It really is. And by the way, I actually, I don't want to admit this. I hope Whitlock does not hear this. I actually found myself going to YouTube late Friday night and looking at the clips of Caitlin Clark's 30-point game because I was curious. And you know what? It was entertaining. She has a game that is really, really fun. It's stylish. She's an unbelievable passer. And if these women could finish around the hoop, she'd probably have 10 assists a game. And I said to myself, this isn't just about race, why she's popular. She has a game that even if a guy like me, who really has no stomach for WNBA could say, you know what, that's pretty damn good stuff right there. Well, that has everything to do with skill. It's not just her pigmentation. And I think that part of it, I'm just telling you, if Caitlin Clark gets better teammates, better role players, and a system that really suits her style, I think she's going to be just fine. But I do think that with her schedule that she's had the last, what, year or so, she's probably a little bit worn out physically.
I thought one of the, and we have like a minute left, I thought one of the funnier storylines, and a lot of it was generated by ESPN, and I understand why they're going to generate certain storylines. They want to make the NBA Finals seem really interesting going in. Meanwhile, I talked to, you know, a bookmaker here who thought it was like a minus 400 series, thought the Celtics were going to roll. But one of the funny storylines was this adulation of Kyrie Irving as being one of the all-time great, most creative scoring or scoring point guards, little guards in the history of the NBA. And listen, it's only two games, so it's not a fair sample. But, you know, all the stuff about Kobe and Mike-level scoring, Michael Jordan-level scoring, it hasn't happened so far for Irving.
Yeah, I found that interesting. Look, Kyrie reminds me a lot of a modern-day Rod Strickland, who was unbelievable with the handle, could play below the rim, very creative. Kyrie's probably the next step in that evolution. But when I started hearing that he was more skilled than Kobe and Mike, I was like, okay, but keep this in mind, guys. I'm going to go cliche 101. Until a home team loses a playoff game in a series,
yeah,
that series doesn't start. So let's see what happens in game three before you write anybody off.
That was exactly one of my storylines coming up later in the show. Steve, we appreciate it. Three knockdown rule. What's going to be the main topic this week?
Well, this week, we're taping the show tomorrow. We're going to talk about the Tank Davis fight. We might have a special guest on. Last week, we had Oleksandr Govozik. He was very charismatic. So we're just going to talk boxing, and hopefully we piss a few people off. That's my job. It's what I do.
There you go. All right, Steve, looking good. We'll see you, buddy.
Thanks.
I'm a little nervous about tackling a very important topic with Steve. You notice what he's doing with his hair?
No. You got
to look him up during the break. I think he's been dyeing his hair. Unless he's now dyeing it gray. He's letting it grow out, and I'm like blown away by it.
We can do a whole hair thing because I think
he's going to be a silver Korean curmudgeon.
I had a very fascinating conversation this weekend about hair and friendship. How about that?
Like, give me a little tease. We got like 15 seconds here.
Yeah, somebody's hair is going through a lot of changes, and I asked one of his best friends, like, you said anything? And he's like, oh, I can't do that.
Really?
I was like, what? Are you really friends?
Oh, wow. You think, okay. We'll address us on the other side is Justin Watkins, the hairless Justin Watkins, except for his face. We'll be in here on Cofield & Company.